I said, well, my team and I'd love to see the video. And the woman at Lost Highway said, all right, let me pop a VHS in FedEx. Let me pop a VHS in FedEx. It'll be there tomorrow morning. So we watched the Johnny Cash Hurt music video. And once we had wiped a tear out of our eyes, I got on the phone. I said, Retta, put us in, coach. We want to play. And the rest is history. It was and remains still the most iconic music video of an artist doing a cover to date.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Andy Gessner. My next guest is the owner and president of HIP, one of the most trusted names in music marketing. He's played in bands and released records since 1979, giving him firsthand insight into the complexities of the music industry. And believe me, there are a lot. He channeled his expertise and passion for music into uplifting fellow artists, and over the past 24 years, he and his team have promoted over 4,800 music videos, championing some of the most renowned artists and best indie talent from all corners of the globe. His name is Andy Gessner, and if you're a musician, this is a conversation you won't want to miss. I know how hard it is out there to make a living from your art, but it's even harder if you don't pay attention to marketing. Sorry, but if you're a creative, you have to wear a lot of hats. But if you're looking for tips, I know Andy has some great ones for making that possible. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with some other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Andy Gessner. Well, hey, Andy, thank you so much for joining me today. I know we had a little bit of workout there before we got started. But that's okay.
You're welcome, Jody. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, I'm glad you could make it. Yeah. I like to start these discussions with a story about an early memory of how sound moved you. So do you have one of those?
I do.
I'd love to hear it.
It is my first coherent memory.
Ooh, okay. Even better.
February 9th, 1964.
Okay.
My older sister, who is 12, comes barreling into my bedroom on a Sunday night, grabs me by the arm. She's all whipped up, Jody. She says, come on, come on. We're going to watch Beatles on TV. Now, I'm just a little kid. I figure it's going to be some kind of insect show. Maybe on PBS. I did not know what she was referring to. So we go down to the TV, and there's my parents, Bill and Pat. They're on the couch. They look a little anxious. So on one side of me is my sister, and on the other side is my brother, who's one year older than my sister. And I can tell something pretty epic is about to happen. It's the Ed Sullivan Show. He twirls his finger around and says, "The Beatles." Well, my sister starts screaming like a banshee, and she starts twirling around like a whirling dervish. And I look over at my brother, and his jaws hit the floor. And I look at this little black and white TV, and there's these four guys with what at the time was considerably long hair. And I'll never forget turning around, looking at my parents. They were aghast. How could Bill and Pat Gessner be? How could they allow their small children to see such rubbish, such riffraff? What is this garbage music? So I have always contended, 61 years later, that that first coherent memory and the sound I heard literally put me on the path that would become my life journey.
Well, yeah, I can imagine it would. What were what were your impressions when you heard the sound? Like, did you like the Beatles when you were hearing it? Or like, did it make a different impression on you? I'm just curious.
Not until 2 years later when in the basement with the knotty wood paneling, that's every basement in the 60s had the knotty pine wood paneling. My older brother and sister got one of those little close-and-play phonographs. And the 45 RPM singles. And they would just play them and play them and play them until the grooves wore out. And it was the earliest Beatles songs. And there was some Beach Boys in there, too. And I just remember, if we all listen to music to feel a way we would rather be feeling, I just saw the energy and the passion and the ebullience in my older siblings listening to this music. And from there, I was hooked. I mean, the early 70s was the era of the hi-fi system. Mm-hmm. Now, I was only 11, so I wasn't allowed to have one. But when my brother was off to high school football practice or high school wrestling practice, I would sneak into his bedroom and grab the headphones with the ear coverings the size of bagels. And I'd be very careful with the record collection, because if he ever knew I was in there messing with his record collection, I would have hell to pay.
I can imagine.
So things like Tommy the Who fascinated me. Mm-hmm. It was like the story. It was this crazy story about a kid who was deaf and he loved pinball. And I felt a kindred spiritness to Tommy because I love pinball too. And I'd listen to these records with the headphones on, and it moved me. It was like nothing, you know, while the other kids were out riding their bikes and, you know, playing tag football, I was there and just listening to all this music. And you know, by the time I saved up enough money to get a hi-fi system, Jody, it was all about the 8-track tapes.
Of course. It just passes you by if you're not quick enough. Yeah.
Are you looking for ways to improve your company's or podcast's impact? You'd be surprised how powerful the use of an intentional audio branding strategy can be. Want to know more? I have a free downloadable PDF that gives you my 5 tips for implementing an intentional audio strategy at voiceoversandvocals.com/audio-branding-strategy. That location does ask to put you on a mailing list, just to send you updates on when the new podcasts come out. But if you really don't want to give your email out, I understand. Just contact me directly. My email is all over my website, and I'll make sure you get that PDF without needing to sign up anywhere. If you do sign up, though, you also get access to a resources section called The Studio, where I have videos, white papers and PDFs, discounts from my guests, and snippets of audio from my guests that no one else gets to hear. So maybe it's worth your while. Totally up to you. And of course, if you're looking for voiceovers, you can get in touch with me about that too. Now, back to the podcast.
Things have accelerated though, don't you think? I mean, it's gotten pretty crazy.
It really has. And what was great about the 8-track tapes is that the local radio stations at midnight, they'd always do their midnight double feature. So they would play two brand new records that had just come out. And you could go to the local music store and for $1.99, you could buy a package of three blank 8-track tapes. So you would tape it unbeknownst to your parents. They didn't want you staying up until midnight, but you do what you have to do.
Oh, yeah. I remember doing that myself, actually.
Right.
Yes. And the boom boxes.
Right.
So, with the two tapes.
So you'd actually get to kind of take these new records for test drive and see if you liked them. And then, of course, if you liked them, it was straight down to EJ Corvettes, which had the lowest price for albums. It was usually $4.99 for the album.
Now, whereabouts are you located?
Well, I am currently in New Jersey, but at the time I was in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
Okay, that's why I was going to ask, because it would depend on what store was available. Yeah, yeah, there were a bunch of stores like that in downtown Toronto, too. So I remember the days when you could afford something like that.
Yes, and it was a tangible item you could actually hold in your hands.
Yes.
And I would usually take 10, 15 minutes to check out the album art and the inner sleeves and maybe the credits or the lyrics. And those days of music discovery are coming back. The kids are digging the vinyl, Jody.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, that's really interesting. So for you, how did you get started? Because you played music, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get started playing the music? And then what was the transition from playing to promoting? Because that's a whole other thing.
Well, answer the second question first. The year's 2000. Mm-hmm. I've spent 20 years playing in musical groups, really grinding and doing the things you had to do to break past that pain point. And Jody, it just didn't happen for us. It didn't happen. And it wasn't due to lack of trying. But it became clear that my immediate dreams in 1984, I was sure I was going to be a rock star. I was 100% confident that I'd be able to quit my crappy day job and just go tour the world in a rock band and life would be good. But then you're dragged down to the elbow thrashing levels of reality. And you realize that, you know, maybe we got to put out a second record. And then we got to put out a third record. And of course, each time you continue to build on the foundation you've already secured. But regrettably, the bigger entities, the labels, they politely passed. Or they would tell us we didn't fit their filter. Many of them just said, you're too odd and peculiar for our tastes. That's okay. We had many people along the way tell us we needed to switch musical lanes or maybe, lay off a little bit on the hyper-literate, ultra-sensitive, and just write straight-up pop songs. Andy, the songs, they're weird. They start and they stop and you're frantic. It all sounds like you're on chemical extractions. I mean, why don't you just simmer down a little and play normal music? Any creative will tell you, I mean, opinions are like back ends. Everybody has one.
Oh, yeah. And they definitely sound like they wanted to change you into something that wasn't you, which kind of defeats the purpose of the whole reason you wanted to do this.
It's true, because you and I both know the best thing you can ever be in life is yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So when you weren't able to get it to work, unfortunately, and that is not the first time I have heard that, what happened that made you decide that you were going to promote other bands? And where does YouTube come in there? Because like there's a lot of video going on here. What's the video advice that you have for people?
Well, in the year 2000, I was given great advice. I was told, Andy, if you've got to reinvent yourself, because I told everyone, I'm like, I can't go and sell appliances at Best Buy. That is like putting up the white flag of defeat.
Well, it's also a waste of your talents.
Well, I could certainly tell other talented independent creatives what not to do. So the advice was, Andy, you know this thing called the World Wide Web? I'm like, yeah, the You Got Mail, and when you turn it on, it goes, boing, 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 yeah, okay, what about it? He says, hey, mark my words, it's only going to be a matter of time before the entire human family will be able to watch music videos on their computer. I'm like, yeah, how are you so sure about that? No, you can take this one to the bank there, sport. The entire human family is going to be able to watch music videos on their computer. So I got to thinking about it, because at that point, MTV, that huge excitement in the 80s had definitely gone away a bit. And I thought about it. I said, well, I'd rather try something and fail than do nothing and succeed. And as you're fully aware, Jody, you know, you got to follow every lead. This was back in the phone call days.
Oh, I remember.
The phone call days.
Yeah.
And you're not going to talk to the decision maker. You're going to talk to their receptionist or their assistant or their intern or their underling. And I came to realize that if you can make friends with those people, and it ended up being true, if you can make friends with those people and make them laugh and say, yeah, I know, I called just 2 weeks ago and I'm just trying to stay pleasantly persistent and not be a real pain in the ass, and they laugh. And it's tough because there's the catch 22. How is anyone going to hire you if you haven't worked with anyone great? But how do you work with anyone great if no one's going to hire you? So the big turning point, the pain point, was January of 2003. I, of course, had always been a huge fan of Lost Highway. What a fabulous label and what an incredible roster. So call comes in, caller ID says 615. I'm like, Nashville? Nashville. So the woman says she has a video, but they don't know what to do with it. There are issues. I say, well, tell me more. She says, well, the artist is Johnny Cash. I say, Johnny Cash, the iconic man in black, the most important, influential American musical figure of our lifetime. She says, yep, that Johnny. But in the video, Andy, he looks like he's gonna die.
Hi, my name is Cornelius Ringen. I'm the founder of the International Sound Awards and the CEO of the sound agency WeSound in Berlin and Hamburg. Today, I want to celebrate my dear colleague and friend, Jody. She is one of the far too few women to give our industry a voice. Not only as a highly professional speaker, but especially by her audio branding podcast. So thank you, Jody, for spreading the word. You are such a great woman, a and I'm looking forward to the next episode of the Audio Branding Podcast. Cheers.
I'm like, oh my. And it's not Johnny's normal repertoire. It's a Nine Inch Nails song.
I remember these. Yeah, that was a great album. I really enjoyed it a lot. Yeah. But I do recall those videos. And yeah, he was showing his age. My goodness. Yeah. So what did you do?
I said, well, my team and I'd love to see the video. And the woman at Lost Highway said, all right, let me pop a VHS in FedEx. Let me pop a VHS in FedEx. It'll be there tomorrow morning. So we watched the Johnny Cash Hurt music video. And once we had wiped a tear out of our eyes, I got on the phone. I said, Retta, put us in, coach. We want to play. And the rest is history. It was and remains still the most iconic music video of an artist doing a cover to date. And
so what did you end up doing with it to change it from what it had originally been?
We didn't change anything.
Nothing at all. Okay.
No.
You just promoted it? Is that the idea?
We did. We sent it out to the decision makers and the gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. Very analogous to the Lumineers Ho Hey video in 2012.
Okay.
There was immediately some like apprehension. And this is, for Johnny, it was like, we can't play a Johnny Cash video on MTV. No way. And even like with the Lumineers and CMT, you would have thought, well, geez, they're a perfect fit for CMT.
Mm-hmm.
But people thought Johnny's version of Hurt was a bit too out there. But Jody, you and I both know, as a marketing person, you present, the public decides.
Yeah.
Everybody loved the Johnny Cash Hurt video, and he would have won all the MTV Music Awards in 2003 if he hadn't shifted off this mortal coil 12 days before the program.
Oh, that's a shame.
He was all set to perform. It was all going to be Johnny, Johnny, nothing but Johnny.
Yeah. I guess there's something to be said for authenticity. I mean, because even though he was doing a cover of that song, it was still very Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing not him about that performance.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I recall watching that and just going, wow, that's real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's what happens. So when you promoted that, was there a particular way that you had to go about doing that to make sure that it had the greatest reach?
Well, 22 years ago, it was a much different video marketing landscape. You would get the one inch tape, and then you would go, and each outlet needed a specific form of tape to support our campaign. Now, in 2003, there were still people who wanted the 3/4 inch tape.
Of course there were. Yeah.
There were many, but it was right about the time that people were switching to Beta SP. So as things rolled along, people would make it a little easier on themselves and on their library by switching to DVCam. So I'd be going to the post office with all these big bags of tapes and going to Chicago for JBTV or to Oakland, California for California Music Channel. And then came the DigiBeta. So instead of the tape being in a gray box, it's now in a blue box. And we're talking lots of money just to get the video to where it needs to be for the decision makers and gatekeepers to decide whether or not they're even going to program it.
Wow.
So you really had to know what you were doing, because the last thing you want to do is send one of these people a video with audio hits or video glitches, or it's in mono, not stereo. It's not closed captioned correctly. So necessity is the mother of all invention. We had to figure it all out. And we got pretty good at it. And once the Johnny Cash campaign had been so successful, I could go back to Sub Pop and I could go back to Octone and John at Fueled by Ramen and Touch and Go and Merge and all the cool indie labels at the time. And of course, pop punk was all the rage. So we were working with Fearless and we were working with Doghouse and we were working with all the cool labels that were putting out the music that all the kids were buying. And let's face it, the music video really is the bait to put on your hook to get people excited about you, because certainly the song tells a story, but then you can enhance the story of the song with an actual visual component to it. And in many ways, the visual is the cornerstone of your identity. Because now more than ever, artists, independent creatives, are public figures. And you can't just sit on the couch and say, hey, I'm not going to do any of that public figure stuff. I just want the world to love me for my music. Those days are over.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, yeah. It's unfortunate because I think that a lot of people feel now that they have to be, like you said, influencers. Like there's just no, you can't do anything else. You need people behind you. You need rabid fans, because otherwise you're not going to get anywhere.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
So now that you are promoting video and you've been doing this for a long time now, what are the differences between what you were doing to promote videos then and what you're doing to promote a video now?
It is still my goal every day to provide the people we need to garner support from with top shelf world-class content. I think one of the reasons why people always put our videos at the top of the pile when it came time to decide what videos to program is they had never heard of 30 Seconds to Mars in 2003, or they had never heard of Death Cab for Cutie or Maroon 5. That's a dumb name. Or I remember Paramore people saying, hey, I think this lead singer is really too young. I think she was 17 in 2006. So I guess if we do the math, Haley is now in her 30s. But I remember in 2007 sending out the first Sia music video. Certainly the folks at the label had high hopes for her. But what better example from small acorns, big oak trees can grow? And we spoke about the Lumineers. I mean, we did a video interview that's on our YouTube channel with them at South by Southwest, March of 2012. Three humble, talented people. No idea, Jody, no idea what was about to happen.
Well, good for them, first of all. Yeah, because it's nice to see talent actually given its due.
I know.
Yeah.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.